I don't want to make anybody that applies for a license feel like they're doing something wrong. I don't have that opinion.
Bethel struggles with its new damp status. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 17th of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, federal help bringing high-speed internet to rural Alaska.
You know, the Alaska bush is one of the most underprivileged parts of the entire United States with respect to broadband internet service.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
Fire and explosions this morning have damaged a natural gas processing facility near Anchorage. No one was hurt in the incident at the Point McKenzie plant. The Fairbanks Natural Gas-owned processing plant is across Kinnick Arm at a fairly isolated location. The fire was at the plant's vehicle maintenance shop. Firefighters reportedly worked to keep a nearby gas storage tank cool, but allowed the fire to burn itself out. Fairbanks Natural Gas CEO Dan Britton says the fire destroyed the maintenance garage, but damage was confined there.
The remaining of the process, our secondary shop and control room are all still intact. We're dealing with the emergency and not expecting any interruptions in the supply source.
It's unclear what sparked the fire. Britton says there was a tanker trailer in the shop, but it had been bled of natural gas and was vented to the outside. Britton suspects drums of used oil stored in the garage may have exploded in the fire.
That's the most likely source of the explosions that occurred after the fire. The trailers are designed in a way that they don't explode, so we don't think that any of the explosions being referred to are as a result of the trailer.
The natural gas processing plant was shut down this morning. Britton anticipates the facility going back into operation over the next day or so. He says the company has enough gas stored to cover Fairbanks customers in the interim.
Given current temperatures and usage, we have over 7 days of supply in Fairbanks. We're anticipating there to be no interruptions to supply in Fairbanks.
Fairbanks Natural Gas is the only source of gas in the interior city. It serves more than 1,000 customers on a local distribution network. Petition sponsors in Bethel say they have collected enough signatures to ask Bethel voters to return the city to a damp alcohol status. Meanwhile, the Bethel City Council is struggling to handle the first liquor license applications in more than 30 years. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson has more.
There are currently 10 businesses in Bethel applying for a liquor license to sell alcohol, but the city council is considering whether or not to oppose all of them. Osaka Restaurant, located in downtown Bethel, has become ground zero in the debate. The application received 40 comments from the community, all in opposition. The concerns were familiar. Alcohol sales could lead to more crime, health, and safety problems. Kilsu Park is the owner of Osaka. At the city council's last meeting, he said that restaurant sales do not pose a threat.
I think it's fine change for the eating place, having a steak with red wine, chicken with white wine, beer with hamburgers or cheeseburger. I think it's a good idea. Of course, we could tell when people get drunk. When people get drunk, that's different story, but enjoying, food with beer and wine, I think that's a good thing.
Park, like many restaurant owners in town, applied for the license after Bethel voters revoked local option alcohol restrictions by a 54% margin in October. Yet the Bethel City Council is working on a protest letter to the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, asking them to deny the application. Park took issue with that letter.
I think I've been following right procedure. I don't think I've done anything wrong at this time. I think it's too early to oppose my application to be turned down.
Park got the jump on the application process weeks before any other Bethel businesses. Vice Mayor Eric Middlebrook said that the issue was larger than just Osaka Restaurant.
I don't want to make anybody that applies for a license feel like they're doing something wrong. I don't have that opinion.
Like many council members, Middlebrook is looking for clarification on what Bethel voters intended when they hit the polls.
Many people feel that when they took the vote to get out of local option, that they were, in fact, voting for liquor stores, and other people don't. And it's a very difficult position as a council member to know which way to go on this.
The council has called for a special election to ask Bethel voters if they truly meant to allow for sales in the city, or if they simply wanted to unshackle the community from other importation restrictions that come with being damp. But the advisory vote won't be held until after the council's deadline to protest the Osaka application. Not ideal, says Middlebrook.
It's unfortunate that we have to form this and submit it before we have the special election so that we truly know what the desires of the community are.
Many council members have said that the outcome of that advisory vote will affect the way they vote on future applications. That included council member Heather Pike.
After the special election, if it is stated by the public that they are for and not against alcohol by the drink served in restaurants and eating places, we'll go forward from there.
A group of Bethel residents have also created a new set of circumstances for the community. Alarmed by the results of the October election, about 28 sponsors began collecting signatures for a ballot initiative that would put Bethel back under local option as a damp community again. Lead sponsor Alan Joseph says that after less than 2 weeks of gathering, they already have about 640 signatures. That's well over the required amount of 404. If that petition is certified and approved by the City Council, it will mean a second special election for Bethel voters. The City Council is also looking to use municipal jurisdictions to limit any potential sales in the community. They are considering a proposed ordinance that would create a no-alcohol sales zone for package stores from within 500 feet of a school or church. That would disqualify an application by the Alaska Commercial Company to sell liquor in their grocery store. The ordinance would also create a 300-foot no-sale zone for restaurants. That would disqualify Osaka Restaurant, which is situated next door to a Pentecostal church. But there's six other restaurants applying, many of which would be unaffected by the ordinance. In Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
30,000 people in southwestern Alaska will be able to go online with high-speed internet access within the next year. Vice President Joe Biden this morning announced a $25 million federal stimulus grant that will provide wireless connections to 53 communities in the area. The grant went to the Sea Lion Corporation, the village corporation for Hooper Bay. Sea Lion Management Company CEO Desiree Pfeiffer says the 53 villages in the Bethel area will get the service. It will be provided by satellite and wireless, not cables or fiber optics. Pfeiffer says that will help get the infrastructure into the villages so they can start service by the end of next year.
Each of these are a standalone facility, proven weatherized technology. There's no overhead wires for the village, so visually it's very clean. There are key village locations within our mapping area, and then there's these smaller substations, no towers. So it is minimal construction.
Sea Lion's partner in the project is Rivada Networks, an international company that Sea Lion began working with about a year ago on other unrelated telecommunications projects. Dr. Alex Hills, who runs a consulting business in Palmer, says the Sea Lion project can demonstrate the possibilities of broadband in other remote areas.
You know, the Alaska bush is one of the most underprivileged parts of the entire United States with respect to broadband internet service. So we're hoping that this program will do the same thing for several regions in the state.
Pfeiffer says Sea Lion, along with Rivada, is already planning to be a part of those future activities.
Our next plans are to continue our partnership, definitely delivering and ongoing operations for the rural telecommunications, but we're also looking at taking this possibly in a statewide application or Lower 48, and of course continuing our work with the federal government.
The Sea Lion grant is one of 18 national grants announced this morning, spending $180 million of the $7.2 billion approved by Congress for broadband expansion. Some of that money will be leveraged as loans, and Dr. Hills says that could help put between $10 and $11 billion into the national system. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a found story becomes a family tradition.
It embraces people who are Jewish and who are not Jewish and kind of combines the mythology about both Hanukkah and Christmas.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Tech Alaska, operators of the Red Dog Mine in Northwest Alaska, delivering jobs and revenues to Alaska for 20 years and now working on the next 20 years. Online at reddogalaska.com. And by Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business with data transfer speeds up to Gig E. ACS, connecting Alaska companies to each other and the rest of the world.
In the final days before the U.S. Senate is set to go on Christmas recess, Democrats are hustling to get business done before work stalls in hopes of ultimately getting a health care bill passed. That's led to unusual behavior by Democrats under the direction of their leaders. Today, two freshman Democrats, including Senator Mark Begich, shut down fellow senators on the floor who wanted more time to talk. Begich was sitting in the presiding chair, a duty often left to freshmen. Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas asked for more time to talk, but Begich twice denied it, a highly unusual move.
Mr. President, I would ask unanimous consent to speak for an additional 5 minutes.
My capacity as Senator from Alaska, I object.
Mr. President, may I inquire of the chair, is it the intent of the presiding officer to prevent any senator from speaking on the floor on this important bill? I'm looking around. I don't see any other senator waiting to speak. I simply would like an explanation of the chair's ruling.
I release my objection.
Begich's office says he was showing frustration at what he perceives as continual delay. Begich wasn't the only one to shut down debate today. Fellow Democratic freshman Al Franken of Minnesota was sitting in the presiding officer's chair when independent Senator Joe Lieberman asked for more time. Franken refused. He said later it was nothing personal.
Joe and I are just talked about it. It was just something that the leader had asked that we just limit everything to 10 minutes, and I want to do it for both Democrats and Republicans. Joe totally understands.
Lieberman has raised the ire of many Democrats for refusing to support some of their health care proposals, but Franken insists his tactics and those of Begich were just done in the name of progress. However, Republican Senator and former vice presidential candidate John McCain of Arizona said he'd never seen behavior like that on the Senate floor and thought it was wrong. Republicans in the U.S. Senate are warning the Obama administration not to make commitments in Copenhagen without the support of Congress. As the U.N. Climate Change Conference reaches its final days, President Obama is traveling there tonight. APRN's Libby Casey reports that senators, including Alaskan Lisa Murkowski, want the president to remember Congress back home.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced in Copenhagen Thursday that the U.S. will help raise $100 billion a year for poorer nations to cope with climate change.
This will include a significant focus on forestry and adaptation, particularly, again, I repeat, for the poorest and most vulnerable among us. So there should be no doubt about the commitment of the United States to reaching a successful agreement here in Copenhagen and meeting this great global challenge together.
Clinton's pledge is contingent on the nations reaching agreements about transparency, so there's oversight of countries like China to be sure they're meeting greenhouse gas reductions. But Senator Lisa Murkowski and her Republican colleagues called a press conference Thursday to say that the Obama administration is acting without the backing of Congress. Senator John Kyle of Arizona, the Republican whip, says the White House should remember all treaties must be approved by the Senate.
Our purpose here is to remind the president and his representatives to make clear to the international community that the president does not have authority to bind the United States in any international agreement. In Copenhagen or anywhere else.
Republicans say the Obama administration should consider the legislative branch more often, not just in climate change negotiations, but also with decisions like last week's announcement by the Environmental Protection Agency that greenhouse gases endanger public health. Senator Murkowski says she wants Congress to make laws about greenhouse gases. She plans to file a disapproval resolution in the new year in an attempt to block the EPA's move. It will first go to the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, which has 20 days to act. Then Murkowski can bring her resolution directly to the floor if she can muster 30 votes. Murkowski now says that will be no problem.
Getting the signatures of 30 members on this issue, I can tell you, is not only easy, it's a done deal. So getting it out of committee and then to the floor is not that significant of a hurdle.
But getting it passed by the Senate might be a different story. Republican Lindsey Graham of South Carolina says he expects Murkowski's resolution to receive support from Democrats, too.
The Supreme Court has ruled that the EPA can regulate carbon through the Clean Air Act. Our courts have spoken. It's a power the EPA now has. They have said they're going to use that power. Now it's time for Congress to speak. And you want bipartisanship, you're going to get it on this issue.
But the bill certainly does not have the support of the Environment Committee's powerful chairwoman, Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer of California. She blasted Murkowski's plans in a press release, calling it, quote, a threat to America's families who deserve to have their health and communities protected. Boxer wouldn't speculate in the Capitol Thursday on Murkowski's chances.
I want my statement to speak for itself.
Other Democrats, including Senator Mark Begich, say congressional action is not the way to go. His office says Murkowski's move is premature and that the EPA is a long way from actually regulating greenhouse gases. But Senator Murkowski disagrees and says she expects power plants to face court challenges right away. Even if the Senate passes her resolution, it has to pass the House and be signed by the president, which is unlikely. But Murkowski reminded reporters Thursday that Congress can override a presidential veto. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The BP pipeline spill on the North Slope has nearly been cleaned up. State Department of Environmental Conservation on-scene coordinator Tom DeRuyter says most of the oiled snow and underlying tundra has been removed for remediation.
The excavation is very close to complete. There's probably 10 or 15% of the site that has yet to be removed. A sampling plan has been approved to verify that the site has been cleaned. And when the excavation is done, then they'll go ahead and implement the sampling plan.
DeRuyter says a DEC spill investigation unit is still working to determine what caused the release of an estimated 46,000 gallons of oil, gas, and water from the 18-inch diameter pipeline late last month at BP's Lisburn Production Center. Large plugs of ice that formed inside the idled line are suspected in the pipe's rupture.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com. AlaskaDispatch.com, reporting from across the state using multimedia and citizen journalism online to tell the story of our state. Find your Alaskan news at AlaskaDispatch.com. And by Alaska Business Monthly, giving voice to Alaska business.
The State Department of Fish and Game is asking Alaskans to be on the lookout for an invasive species of frog that has been found on imported Christmas trees. Two Pacific chorus frogs have been found so far from trees that came from Washington State. The department isn't too worried about the species establishing itself in Alaska, but is concerned the frogs may be carrying pathogens that could infect native frogs. Tammy Davis works for the department's invasive species program. She says she first heard about the problem last week and says the news was surprising.
And whenever a species is brought into a new environment, we can make assessments based on its behavior in its native environment, and then if it tends to its range expands, but you just can never know how an organism will respond specifically.
The department is asking anyone who finds an amphibious hitchhiker in their Christmas tree to call 1-877-INVASIVE. Davis says anyone with questions shouldn't hesitate to call.
Because invasive species have had a huge impact on the decline of organisms around the world, it's it's just better to be safe than to be sorry. And prevention is better always.
Davis declined to name the nursery that sold the trees, saying it wasn't their fault. She says last year, invasive wasps were found on Christmas trees that were turned away from Hawaii and then shipped to Alaska. Every family has their own unique holiday traditions. Anchorage resident Leslie Kleinfeld has created a new one, celebrating Hanukkah around a story her mother wrote in 1934. Dolores Kleinfeld was a poet and writer who left behind files stuffed with thousands of poems and stories when she died in 2000. Leslie says she was going through the files with her sisters when they discovered a gem they had never seen before.
And we found this and just laughed hysterically. And so it has become a part of my Hanukkah celebration because in our household, too, we always included non-Jews at our Festival of Lights. Hanukkah to us is a celebration of freedom to believe and practice what is ever closest to your heart without persecution. And so that includes lots of people, whether they be Jewish or not. And so what I love about the story is it embraces people who are Jewish and who are not Jewish and kind of combines in a very fun and delightful way some of the ideas and some of the crazy stories and the mythology about both Hanukkah and Christmas.
Now, you said that you laughed hysterically when you found this, when you were going through it. Was this an unusual bit of writing for your mom?
My mom was a pretty serious writer. She didn't usually write funny things. I mean, she had a great sense of humor. It was very articulate. But her writings were pretty serious. So when we found this, it was like, I mean, the humor section in her anthology, I think, is only limited to this maybe one other piece. I mean, most of her stuff was pretty serious. Prose and poetry.
Well, would you read it for us, please?
Oh, I'd be delighted. December 17th, 1934. To Mr. Klaus. Mr. Kringle? You change your name too? Enough is enough. This year, we are changing our working hours, our name, and our holiday even. New Santa? Vos zuchste. We have a few things to bring to your attention. One, we only work one night a year. What kind of a job is that for 8 strong boy chicks? All year we exercise, we go to the gym, eat good, so we can carry this ridiculous load of toys for kinder all over the world. And you? You sit in your warm house with Mrs. Klaus, eating pies and pastries, and we wonder each year if you will fit not only in your outfit, but in your sleigh as well. Not enough the toys, but also you. Two, you pick the coldest night of the year, and what are we dressed in? Sleigh bells. Have you considered blankies for our backs as well as your knees? Three, we have been schmoozing with some of our friends in another union, and they work 8 days a year, and they spread their toys over those days so that it isn't only one load. A bissel here, a bissel there, and all the kiddies get goodies. Not only that, but they put a candle in the window. We should find our way. Do you know how hard it is to find all these places in the dark? And not only that, but they leave what is called Hanukkah Geld for all 8 of us. So, we have a bissel something to make it through the rest of the year and get a blankie. So, new Santa, this year, we are going to try another union. And if we are not in Florida on vacation by Christmas, and we are not too tired, we will consider one more night's work. Okay, boy cheeks. Come Streisel and Kitzen. Come Herschel, come Zitzen. Come Yonkel and Blinzer. Come Jenta and Pitzer. Get Bube. And avec we go. Happy Hanukkah to all. And to all Schluff gesunte Hey. We are on the way.
Well, I can see that it's a great enjoyment for you to read that. And what would you want people to know, not only about the time of Hanukkah that we're in right now, but also your family's tradition in it and your mom's place there?
I'm a little verklempt when you ask that. You know, exchanging customs and stories and learning more about each other's holidays is a way to foster understanding of one another and acceptance of one another. And that is so in keeping with who my mom was and the bohemian in her she was like Mother Earth. She would just collect people from many faiths, many colors, many places on the planet and bring us all together under her wing and share what was meaningful to her and also rejoice in what is meaningful to others as well.
Anchorage resident Leslie Kleinfeld. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks and Shane Iverson in Bethel. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. What would you do with an extra $56 a week? Well, that's how much you're spending if you smoke one pack of cigarettes a day. At $8 a pack, that's $240 a month, $3,000 a year. Think about it, and think about quitting. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, 1-888-842-7848. It's free, and it works. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. Help manage subsistence hunting and fishing in Alaska. Apply for a seat on your local Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. The deadline to apply is January the 8th. For more information, call 800-478-1456. This announcement is sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Subsistence Management.
Ikayutskuk mrangnaksam tsalakshanan alaskami. Ilagachukufchi Regional Council Lanun Una Nampakalagalugu 800-478-1456. Application not humchikut January 8th Ami. Unakankigun Khtuk U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Subsistence Management.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.